Gandhi was assassinated on this day, 65 years ago, in 1948. And owing to that anniversary, the University of New South Wales has done something which I think is a great idea. They've inaugurated a thing called the Gandhi Oration. It made its debut last year. This year, the orator is none other than the Honourable Justice Michael Kirby, who insists that I don't call him judge because he is retired, but he's moved on to give the Gandhi Oration today. He's currently an honorary adjunct professor at the University of New South Wales. He's just given that speech and he's come into the RN Drive studio to talk about it. Thanks very much for coming in, Judge.
Thank you for having me, and I'm not a judge. No, you're being very naughty here, Waleed.
I am being retired. Once a judge, always a judge.
The people give the title, then the people take it back. I support that principle.
Well, if anyone texts in saying that they're upset that I've referred to you as judge, I will desist, but I've got a feeling they'll be on my side. But anyway, all these things are trivialities compared to the serious things that you discuss in this speech, which went for some 50 or so minutes. Before we get to some of the themes, I'm intrigued by your desire here to use Gandhi's life as a basis for guidance, as something that we can extract principles from. When in your speech, you repeatedly refer to the fact that he was inconsistent and often puzzling with the things that he said and did. How reliable is the guidance that we can draw from a figure who is so inconsistent?
If you're human, you're going to be inconsistent. If you're human, you're going to be paradoxical. You're going to have different viewpoints at different times in your life. But Gandhi undoubtedly was one of the great spirits of all time, and certainly India was very fortunate to have such a father of the nation, a man of the spirit, but a man of the hard-nosed politics that he played hard ball.
So what are some of the inconsistencies that you see when you look at his life?
Well, he puzzled his supporters as much as he infuriated and puzzled the British. The inconsistencies were he was a man of the law, but he was a man who then threw away the law. He was a man who loved the British, but he also loved to get them out of India. He was a man who upset his colleagues. He had the Quit India movement during the Second World War, and then he called it all off to their astonishment. He was a man who spent time in prison, but he could mix with kings and with viceroys, and he was a trained lawyer who never lost the art of communication. He was a most unusual and highly principled man.
Or indeed the art of political organisation, and it's one of the things that comes through in your lecture that I guess we often forget. A lot of people think of Gandhi as some kind of esoteric, perhaps ascetic figure, but he was deeply implicated in the lives of people around him and of the societies that he was in.
Yes, well, this is what's brought out in a recent biography, a new biography of him by Lelefeld, who went to South Africa, where he spent 20 years, and he describes the whitewashed courthouse in South Africa, which is still in use in the post-apartheid era in South Africa as a courthouse, to think that this great soul, which is what Mahatma means, the great soul of Gandhi, was there fighting for the rights of workers and for Indian workers in particular in that very courtroom, which is still there. And it made me think of all the little courtrooms in Australia and to think that Gandhi was actually in that courtroom and fighting for fundamental rights and against racial discrimination, which was as much an issue in South Africa as it was in India. South Africa trained him, and then he went to India having learned a mass organisation, and he brought it to bear to take away from the British the greatest jewel in their crown.
Well, he was fighting to end racial discrimination in South Africa to a point, wasn't he? Because one of the points that you make in your speech is that he didn't extend his advocacy or his campaign to the rights of blacks in South Africa.
Not at that time, but you've got to see his life as a journey. He was, as it were, standing up for those who were close to him, which was the Indian people in South Africa, a sizable minority in South Africa. Now, Gandhi would always acknowledge that he had said things that were inconsistent. He wasn't a person who pretended that everything had been fully formed as a young barrister in London. He was a man who was on a great journey, and the amazing thing is he was already known as a Mahatma in 1914. So when he was in South Africa, he was already recognized as a great soul. And then he went back to India and used these ideas that he'd propounded there and developed them and advanced them to the infuriated British rulers, and also sometimes the infuriated people of India, including the Islamic people in India, who found Gandhi rather hard to take.
It's interesting because you are now doing exactly this same thing, although without the infuriation, I hasten to add, in trying to extract lessons from his life and his writings, and then apply them to modern challenges. And you identify women's rights, climate change, animal rights, and then human sexuality. Now, we've probably only got time to pick one. I imagine most people will find your analysis of his approach and his reflections on human sexuality to be the most stimulating and unexpected of the four. Take us through your thoughts on that.
Well, the new book by Lelyfeld on the life of Gandhi has available a whole series of letters that he wrote to a friend whom he had in South Africa, Hermann Cullenbach, who was a German, Jewish, white architect. And Gandhi destroyed all the letters that he had received from Cullenbach, but Cullenbach kept all the letters he had received from Gandhi. It was obviously a very, very close and loving relationship. And the question is whether it went beyond that. A lot of people in India today don't want to hear this story, but the story is told in the meticulous, well-written letters that Gandhi wrote over a period of about 30 years to Cullenbach, and it's all there in the National Archives of India today.
Well, although a range of other things that Gandhi had to say about sexuality have also survived, they'd seem at odds with any suggestion that there was a sexual relationship between the two of them, because he was quite disdainful of, well, sex generally.
Yes, well, he was a great advocate of celibacy. But the advocacy of celibacy, and indeed the practice of celibacy, arose at the time he was in South Africa, when he very publicly acknowledged that he was not continuing a sexual relationship with his wife. Basically, he was saying that even married people should give up sex, because then sex was a kind of oppression of women in particular, and they should therefore establish a relationship which was asexual, except for the purpose of having children. But essentially, some of the letters that he wrote and some of the references he made in those letters to the relationship he had with Cullenbach seem rather different from this totally asexual relationship. For example, referring to himself as the upper house and Cullenbach as the lower house, referring to, "I'd look at you and at your photograph, and whenever I see Vaseline, I think of you, leaving his wife and going to live in the same house, and on one occasion said almost in the same bed, in a whites-only suburb of South Africa. A very unusual tale. But the important thing is, Gandhi was a proponent of non-sexual love, or became so at about this time in his life, but he was also a proponent repeatedly of love, ahimsa, love, was a central idea in his thesis for human life. What's the lesson? I think Gandhi today would say the lesson is love. Love one another.
Well, it's a powerful lesson and a really powerful concept. Thank you so much for coming in and sharing just a slice of your thoughts with us, and congratulations on the speech you've just given.
Thank you very much, Waleed.
That's the Honourable Michael Kirby, who I'll just go on calling Judge, who is now an honorary adjunct professor at the University of New South Wales, of course, famously a former Justice of the High Court of Australia, one of the great dissenters. You're on RN Drive with Waleed Ali. Send me your thoughts on that, 0418 226 576.